Good evening, everyone. Happy to be here, happy to see you all. It's very hot in Paris. I don't know if it is wherever you are, but wherever you are, whatever it is the appropriate place, the appropriate time. It's perfect. So, with all of what's happening in the world today, I got to thinking about what someone calls dominator thinking. And all that means is the thought and the practice of having someone who dominates and someone who is dominated, which of course we can look at from a Buddhist perspective as being very dualistic, with someone who's better than another, someone who's higher, someone has more power than the other. And which translates in the world concretely, and we see that that's how things are. And that basic duality relies on, in order to be maintained, that duality, we have to have a constant feeling of lack. If we had everything we needed, if we felt that we were, like I said, if this was the perfect place, I'm the perfect person, these are the perfect circumstances, there would be no need to make ourselves be something else, to look at someone else and say that person is less or more in me, because I have everything I need right now. Now, of course, we don't go around thinking this all the time, but it's good to be reminded of that, which is the essence of our practice, in fact, which is the fullness, the suchness, the oneness of life, that everything as it is perfect. What does that mean? Or how can we develop that and cultivate that? And we have a koan that's actually a phrase from the Diamond Sutra. Before it's a koan, it's a phrase from the Diamond Sutra, I should say. I wrote it down because it speaks to this, what I'm talking about. If a man, it says, but let's say, if a person wishes to know the three worlds and all the Buddhas, he or she must realize that everything in the Dharma world is created in the mind. So I'll just repeat it. If a person wishes to know the three worlds and all the Buddhas, he or she must realize that everything in the Dharma world is created in the mind. And when we work with this as a koan, we're asked to look at the three worlds. So what are the three worlds? Look at all the Buddhas. What are all the Buddhas? And the final phrase, everything created in the mind is created in the mind. So the three worlds, you can hear already when we talk about three, a number, we're talking about separation. It's not just one. Right, so it's not just one world. talking about three worlds. And so that's a signal to you that, okay, so maybe I should look into that duality. What do I, when I'm saying three worlds, you know, you can find any groups of three things and make those categories. We could very simply see it as past, present, and future. That's an easy threesome to look at, right? So that's three worlds of the past, the present, and the future. And this phrase says that in order to really know the three worlds, we have to see that everything is created in the mind. So this can tell us that the mind is creating those three worlds. The mind is saying past, present, and future, right? The mind is saying more power, less power. The mind is saying black, white. The mind is saying man, woman. Of course, these are all very practical differences that we need to know. We need to be able to distinguish colors. We need to be able to distinguish size. I had a dream recently in which I had a pair of shoes that I loved, but they were size 41. And I wear size 39. So in the dream, it was very frustrating because the shoes were too big for me. So we need to know what our shoe size is so that we can have appropriate shoes, right? And there's different shoe sizes because there's different size feet. But it doesn't mean that 39 is better than 41 or that 41 is better than 39. We, in the mind, we create those differences that we say one is better than the other. We are able to distinguish that one foot is smaller than the other. But what our mind does also, so our mind is able to distinguish, which is absolutely crucial and beautiful, but it also passes judgments and creates differences instead of just seeing the equality. So, if you really want to know the three worlds, you have to see they're created in the mind. If you really want to know all the Buddhas, you have to see they're created in the mind. And the Buddhas, in this text, it's a capital B. It's not a small B. You know, sometimes we talk about everyone is a Buddha. But everyone is a Buddha, but not everyone realizes it. So, sometimes we have a quote too, I think maybe it's Dogen, who says, Buddhas see other Buddhas. So Buddhas with a capital B see other Buddhas with a small b. Buddhas with a small b see Buddhas and ordinary people. So what we're saying is that Buddhas with a capital B have realized that everyone is Buddha and they don't see ordinary people and Buddhas. So this is saying in order to know all of the Buddhas, all the patriarchs, all the realized people, whatever, you have to realize that everything is, that too is created in the mind. Well, what does that mean? So we can say that there's a prime minister and there is a street cleaner. And there is a movie star and there is a football star and there's a a boy that picks up the balls that are kicked by the football star, and there are fancy restaurants with fabulous food, and there are people who have no food and a very simple meal, right? There are all of these things. We see that. We need to see that there are all of these things. But we also need to see that we create the differences. So just to stay with the Buddhas, we make the Buddhas into this great thing that is not us. We put a capital B on it, big B, and that's somewhere else. It's unattainable. It's not here. It's not me. It's in the future, I hope, me. But it's not now, here. That's when we see that is when we really see the Buddhas. We really realize we know the Buddhas. We know what that is. If we put it into our current climate in the world of, the chairman of the board of a company and the worker who's building the product, our society rates the person, the chairman of the board, as more important than the person making the product. And the way that then that is translated is that the person who's the chairman of the board gets a lot more money and a lot more recognition and a lot more power than the person who's making the product. But if we think about it, why is that? Why should there be that difference? Well, we can come back to what I said before of the notion of lack. So the person who has the more power, because he or she also has this feeling of lack, well, in order to maintain their position, has to maintain the others in a position of lack, has to take more, has to grab more than the other so that they can maintain that difference. Or we think of it in terms of ourself. On the one hand, we think of ourselves as being really important. And on the other hand, we have total lack of self-esteem. We don't think of ourselves as being important. We think other people are more important. And so then we're in this conflict constantly of trying to make ourselves seem more important in the eyes of others. But all we do is hurt our own sense of self because we don't really see who we are. And if we realize that that self, that Buddha, is also created in the mind, then that changes how we experience Buddha. We could say Buddhas with a capital B are those who realize that Buddhas with a capital B are created in the mind. And therefore, they are Buddhas with a capital B. You see, it's one of these weird Zen things that doesn't make any sense, but it does if you experience it. You know? And then we come to the last phrase, which is, everything is created in the mind. So in order to know the three worlds and all the Buddhas, you have to realize that everything is created in the mind, including that sentence that everything is created in the mind. Here we have another thing that doesn't seem to make any sense. Because if everything is created in the mind, well, that means even that phrase, everything is created in the mind, is created in the mind. Which leaves us nothing to hang on to. Which leaves us, well, Okay, everything is created in the mind. And even that is created in the mind. And there's a sense of, well, let's say when we're trying to maintain this dominator mentality, when we're trying to maintain this sense of all-important self, it's really tiring. It's exhausting, in fact, because it's never enough. It's never the right moment. It's never the right amount. It's never the right person. We're never how we really want to be. We might be just for a minute, but then something's wrong again. And it's exhausting. We wear ourselves out doing that. We create suffering for ourselves and for others. And by trying to figure the thing out, we wear ourselves out and we become exhausted. But when we see that everything is created in the mind, come back to this phrase from Diamond Sutra, there's this deep relaxation. Because we see it's just a thought. It's just an idea. It's just a concept. Something similar that comes to mind. I don't know if anyone has seen it, the series The Sopranos. It's one of the great television series of all time, but it's about a mafia guy, right, mafia boss, who goes to a psychotherapist. And so throughout the whole thing, there's six seasons, you see him in his sessions with his therapist and working on stuff and whatever. And he's got a real anger problem. And his sister, which kind of explains why he does what he does, you know, he goes in for rage and kills someone or something. But his sister also has an anger problem, and she goes to an anger management group because her husband says he's going to divorce her if she doesn't get a handle on her anger. And this changes her life. And so she tells her brother, Tony Soprano, about it. And she explains to him kind of what we're saying. She said, you know, because he said, oh, but you know, there's all these people doing this stuff out there that makes me really angry. And she said, yeah, that's exactly it. People out there are just doing stuff. But you're the one who becomes angry. And the whole idea is you just become aware of your anger, but you don't act on it. So in the same sense, when we become aware that the three worlds, the future that I'm always pushing towards, the past that I'm always hanging on to, and the present, which I can't find, when we see that those are all just created in the mind, what a relief. It's just an idea of the future. It's just an idea of the past. It's just an idea of the present. And the only way we can truly experience it, truly know the present, is just to be here with it. Someone who I was talking to about this poem recently gave an example that was very clear. She said, you know, in art history, if you, like, say in architecture or art, you know, anything, and I gave the example of poetry, you have to learn the forms. You know, so I'll take poetry. You have to study poetry. You learn about the great masters, the people who really wrote beautiful poetry, the structures, you know, the metric counts, the number of lines, the different schools. We learn about, American poetry, English poetry, French poetry, Portuguese poetry, German poetry, all this stuff. And then, in order to be true, in order to really be present to the art, your art, you have to let go of all of that. Otherwise, you're just repeating theory, construct, ideas, which the people who wrote those things were not thinking about. If you say, romantic poetry, the English romantics. When they were doing that, they weren't thinking of themselves as the English romantics. She gave the example of architecture. When during the Renaissance, nobody was thinking, they weren't calling this the Renaissance. Nobody was talking about Gothic architecture when they were creating what we think of as Gothic architecture. Or Romanesque. Those are just created in the mind, those terms. In order to really experience the building that you're looking at, or really experience the poem that you're reading, or really experience the film that you're watching, you have to let go of all of the theories and the ideas and the concepts about it. It's just now. It's just this. And then you can truly be present with what is. So it applies to art, which I'm citing these examples, but it also applies to every moment of our life. And it applies to our relationship with each other, with ourselves, and with others. So if we think of it in terms of dominator and person who is dominated, we don't really see the other if we are thinking of them as being lesser. We don't really see the other if we are thinking of the other as being better. And we're not really seeing ourselves if we're thinking of the other as being better or lesser. We're not seeing, our true self. We could say, when I said about the Buddhas with a capital B and the Buddhas with a small b, maybe we could say that usually we're focused on ourself, our little self, who we think is, everything we do is based around trying to preserve that self, for better or worse. We want other people to think we're great. We feel like other people don't think we're great. We don't like who we are. We want to be someone else, etc. And when we realize that that's created in the mind, all of that, then we see the self for what it really is. And we can truly appreciate the self for what it is. We see the beauty of who we truly are. And when we see that, we see the beauty of everyone else, who they truly are. And then no one is black or white. No one is rich or poor. No one is old or young. And yet, there are black people and white people, there are rich people and poor people, and there are old people and young people. So this practice of this that I'm talking about begins with acceptance. Begins by accepting that, or having the willingness to say, Wherever you are is the right place. The present moment is the right place. Who you are right now in this place is the right place. This right here is, you know, I'll sometimes say, the throne of enlightenment. It ain't going to happen anywhere else. This is where it's happening. It's not going to happen tomorrow. It didn't happen yesterday. It's only going to be now. So we have to accept that first. And a way of accepting that, we come back to my latest theme of these days, which is love. To love what is, to love what you have, because you don't actually have anything, but to love where you are, to love your life just as it is, because it's entirely appropriate. This is wholly your practice. And I know it's not easy. You've heard my stories about how I struggled with that, about thinking that I wanted my practice to look differently. I was terribly disappointed when I realized that I wasn't going to become someone else. But so if we can offer love to that moment, to that place. So here you each are sitting in your homes. Love that home. Love that seat. Love this moment. Love who you are. I don't know, this is a concept unless we really go into it. Look at it. See what does that feel like? Try it. See what it feels like. It offering love like this is a hugely generous practice. And when we do, if we love the person who doesn't look like me, who doesn't have the same skin color, who isn't the same nationality, who doesn't live in the same neighborhood, who doesn't live in the same country, I don't know. That's a step towards ending suffering for me and for the other. And it's in that moment we experience wholeness instead of division. We see in the world how much there are people and forces at work focusing on division, enhancing division with this mind of difference and lack. And as Martin Luther King said, the only way, or the Dalai Lama says the same thing, the only way to reduce those divisions, the only way to, let's see, conquer hate is love. It's the only way. And all of the great spiritual traditions say the same thing. And there's a reason for that. But we each have to find that out for ourselves. And I offered this quote from the Diamond Sutra because it's a concrete practice of doing it, of looking into how these three worlds are created in the mind, in my mind, how all the Buddhas are created in the mind, how everything is created in the mind. And it's an encouragement to be big, be vast, be wide. And that's what Genpo, my teacher's teacher, calls big mind. So, big. Well, Walt Whitman says, I contain multitudes, which Joa tells me is the title of one of Bob Dylan's new songs. Right, Joa, wasn't it that? Yeah. He's plagiarizing Whitman, but so did I in one of my books. But it's not plagiarizing Whitman because we all contain multitudes. And can we do that? Can we be that? Can we see that? Go beyond the boundaries of who you think you are and who you think others are. Open your heart. And if we do that, as this person was saying to me about art history and other art, same thing applies to politics. If the ground of who we are, if we see that it's all created in the mind, and we therefore open our hearts and include everything and everyone with love, that then changes our political actions in the world, changes everything we do in the world. I just pick politics because that's very present for us all. It makes it very easy to put on a mask to protect others, to keep distance, to protect others. It makes it very easy to not discriminate according to race, color, ethnicity. And it helps us to be free of our ideas and therefore be able to see the situation clearly and know how to act appropriately according to them. So, that's about all I have to say tonight. I'd love to hear what you have to say or ask. Or share.
I'd like to share a quote with you that I've read today. And that relates very much to what you were saying about the artists. And it's a quote by John Cage, the artist John Cage. And he said, when you start working, everybody's in your studio, the past, your friends and enemies, the art world, and above all, your own ideas, all are there. But as you continue painting, they start leaving one by one and you're left completely alone. Then, if you're lucky, even you leave.
That's it, exactly.
And so we contain multitudes, but in order to do that, we empty ourselves also. And that can only happen when nobody else is there, even us.
And John Cage was a Zen practitioner, not surprisingly.
I wanted to share something, but I don't know how to elaborate this. I don't know if it's a question or just sharing, but I feel very heartbroken. Like I've been, you know, reading more and listening more testimonials about racism, and I don't know, I feel so heartbroken with this moment, and it reminded me of something. Like when I read a book about women in Zen and about how women have practiced Zen in Japan. And I know even if we are all one, there's a way women have practiced through centuries, which is very different from the way men have practiced. And that made me feel seen, in a way. Or that made a lot of things make more sense to me. I don't know how to put it. And also when you talk about the past, like when we see these, like for example, in Portugal, there's a lot of racism, even in the way we talk about our discoveries, like when we discovered Africa and Brazil and all that stuff. So how can we think of the present without deconstructing this past, without creating a way to freely think of this past, and not because there's ne never on this discourse, there's never a neutral tone, you know, there's the story is told with a clear intention, let's say. So, yeah, I right now I feel I'm a bit entangled with this anger and brokenheartedness about all these issues. We'd always have, in a way, I've always been a bit concerned about is when I was a child and I was told about this, how the Portuguese discovered their people, I was always a bit puzzled about it because it never did much sense to me, but still, that was the way it was taught, and it still is, you know. So, yeah, we are all one, but not so. I don't know how to express this in any other way. Sorry, it took me too long, and that's it.
Thank you for bringing that up. First, about the heartbreak. We need to let ourselves be heartbroken. The famous rabbi's quote of "the only whole heart is a broken heart," and we need to let ourselves be touched. That's part of opening to the moment, of accepting things as they are, and seeing the other truly. If we don't see the other truly, then we wouldn't be heartbroken. And I'm the same with women practicing differently than men. And I think, you know, it continues today, although not in the same way. I forget who it was. Someone recently, maybe Joel remembers this. Where someone said the big difference with Dharma in the West is women. And that if, of course, men are important in Dharma practice in the West too, but the way that women are able to be more, that the men and women are together in the practice, has a big influence on the flavor and the manifestations of Dharma in the West. And these women had an influence too before they came to the West, before it came to the West, but in a different way. Now, in terms of the past, absolutely. I think what you're saying about knowing the history fits with what we were saying earlier about training in an art form or studying architectural history. You cannot meet the moment if you don't know those things. And yet, if we hang on to the past, we won't be able to act appropriately in the moment, because our situation today is not what it was then. And it's the consequences of what was then, that's karma, right? past actions give rise to the current situation. And we need to acknowledge those, which we do every morning during retreats. We make atonement for our actions, and we need to do that. But then we need to move on and say, okay, now what do? If we don't atone, we won't be able to appropriately say, now what do? And this is where, in our current moment, there's a kind of awakening, a new kind of awakening, to look at and atone for the past actions, I think. It's interesting, though, that what you say is because, you know, I talk to a lot of Portuguese people on Skype regularly and throughout this process. And I think you're the first person who's really said to me in such clear terms, we have a problem with racism in Portugal. Several people have even said to me, we don't have a problem. It doesn't exist here. And I was surprised because, I don't know, I wasn't going to challenge them, but I was surprised to hear that. You know? So we need to awaken to it. And the way that we can awaken to it is to let go of our ideas. I know I've always heard about in Portugal about how, but I hear this in the U.S., you know, this huge denial about genocide in America and slavery, right? Among Americans. But I've always heard that in France, well, it was different. The French colonists, they were different than the British. The British never married any of the people they colonized. The French had all kinds of affairs with all the people and children. And I've heard the same thing about the Portuguese. Portuguese went and they settled down there. They had relationships, they got married, and then they went away. You know, and they took their partners with them and they stayed there and whatever. So we have all these stories that we tell ourselves about our colonial past. Every country does, you know. And it's important for us to all look at them and see what you know. It has everything to do with where we are today. And yet, if we hang on to it and only see it through that lens, then we would fall back on, well, you know, there are no more slaves in America. They were freed. So we don't need to think about what was before. Or Chibble doesn't have any more colonies. We left, you know. We did a great thing. We opened the world so that everyone else could go explore, you know. But we left. French could say, oh, well, you know, we brought the Napoleonic Code to all these countries and gave them civilization and the most beautiful language in the world and fabulous education systems. It's to miss the point of the current moment. You know, so. But we need to see the past, but not hang on to it. And we need to, not that we project into the future, but we do say, okay, now I will change. Which is a way of saying, the next action will not have the same consequence. I don't know what it will be, but it won't be the same consequence.
And can I add something to that? Because I feel when changes, it's an admitting that something we did or thought or said was hurtful in a way. Let's say there's this expression in Portuguese that's like, so preto que? Like, I'm the black one or what? Like, if someone's forgetting you or, yeah. Well, I've said this a lot, but only now I like I'm not I haven't said it in a long time, you know. I'm not saying it now, but only now I realized how wrong that was. And that feels I'm deeply ashamed of that. And it feels very it's a very bad feeling of being wrong. And I think that's also one something that's prevents us to change, that doesn't enable us to change. And I think that's also part of it, to feel, I don't know, ashamed or like as you said, like the atonement, but then move on. I'm not holding on to this feeling. I'm just acknowledging and saying, oh, that was really wrong, and I'm not going to say that ever again, even if I haven't said it in a long time. But yeah, but it feels very, it's very uncomfortable to feel wrong and to feel, yeah.
And if you hang on to that feeling of being wrong, then your actions in the present moment you won't be fully present. My son told me this story that when he was last summer, he was a waiter for the first time in a restaurant, and it was like in his first week or so, I don't know. And there was a big table, 10 people or something, and he took all the orders, and it's all, you know, really stressful. And he forgot someone's macaroni and cheese. So at the table, he forgot it. Like he didn't enter it correctly, or something happened, but he forgot it. And it threw him off completely for the rest of the time he was waiting on that table. He couldn't focus. He was completely worried about that, trying to make up for it all the time. And then one of his colleagues pulled him aside, the manager pulled him aside and said, William, forget about the macaroni and cheese. Forget it. It's done. But be there for them for the rest of the meal. You know, then it'll be okay. And it's exactly what you're saying. You know, if we get caught up on not wanting to be wrong, then all we're focusing on is being wrong. But when we atone for it, which we also do in the Jukai ceremony, we atone for it, then we can let go and move on and just be with what is here and really serve that people, those people at the table, and not worry about the macaroni and cheese. Or saying some racist term. We have those things in English too. I'm so embarrassed in American English. I'm horrified. You know, even things we have in September, in October, when it's like summer again. In American English, you call that Indian summer. Sounds like a really nice term, right? Well, it's not. It comes from believing that the Indians are treacherous and they're pretending to give you something that isn't really there. They're trying to cheat you. And so it's an Indian summer. It's fake. It's terrible. It's really terrible. We also say that about if someone gives you something and then they take it back. In English, we say you're an Indian giver. Indians give you something and then you take it back. Terrible. Really horrible. So, anyway. It's all about atoning and being, in order to be fully present and love fully. We're out of time. Thank you. For those of you, I'm not sure who signed up or not, but if you'll be present on Saturday, I'll see you Saturday. If not, it's not too late to sign up. Otherwise, I'll see you next Thursday. And I don't know if we had anything else we needed to say. Maybe I should say, because I don't know how many of you are aware of this, that next year in August, I will be giving transmission to Joa. which is a huge event for the Sangha. It's an important moment for Joa, who has been devoted his life to this practice for more than 25 years. For me, who have and I have worked with him for almost as long, and for all of you, for the Sangha, because it's not possible without the Sangha. It involves all of us. And I hope that all of you will come to, it will be a week-long retreat in August. It will be in France, however. And I'm giving you a more than a year's notice so that you can save your money, figure out carpools. I'm told that you can go from Portugal to that part of France in a day, in a car. So it would be maybe just a little bit more expensive than going from Lisbon to the north of Portugal. But whatever you can do to get there, please come. And it's a rare occasion. My teacher, who has been teaching for more than 30 years, has only 5 successors, only given transmission 5 times. So it's really a rare experience and very powerful moment for the entire Sangha. So I want you to know this, and I will be sending out an email at some point soon, and you can spread the word among yourselves if there's anyone who you're in contact with. And you can ask me questions about it, but not right now because we're out of time. Or you can ask Joe or whatever. So, thank you. And I guess we'll do the 4 vows.